Spotlight sweeping over the logo for 20th Century Fox, carved into a golden monolith. A Michael Douglas production. A Robert Zemeckis film. Romancing the Stone. The word romancing is a flamboyant red and orange. The tail of the G curls around and behind the word stone that's in capitals and is emerald green. A stubbly-faced cowboy bursts into a wood cabin brandishing a shotgun, surprising a blonde woman.
What's it gonna be, Angelina?
It was Grogan. The filthiest, dirtiest, dumbest excuse for a man west of the Missouri River.
You can die two ways, Angel. Quick like the tongue of a snake, or slower than the molasses in January.
But it was October.
I'll kill you, goddammit, if it's the 4th of July. Where is it?
Her face hidden in shadow, she glances towards a weathered saddlebag.
Get over there!
Angelina retreats towards a table as Grogan claims the bag.
I told him to get out, now that he had what he came for.
Not quite, Angel. Take him off. Do it!
She's wearing a low-cut top and long skirt.
Come on!
She starts removing her skirt, but has a dagger strapped to her thigh. She deftly throws the blade into his heart. He drops the shotgun, growls, and falls forward.
That was the end of Grogan, the man who killed my father, raped and murdered my sister, burned my ranch, shot my dog, and stole my Bible.
Angelina flees the ramshackle cabin and, clutching the saddlebag, climbs onto the back of a horse. She gallops across a prairie.
But if there was one law of the West, brothers, who seem to ride forever. But suddenly there he was, my beloved Jesse.
Up on a rocky ledge, the three brothers open fire, but Jesse needs just three shots to kill them all.
He was the one man I trusted, the only man.
He descends on horseback.
My heart leapt as I watched him ride near. I could barely wait to feel the warmth of his touch.
In the shade of a rocky outcrop, with the west stretching into the horizon, the couple climb from their horses, race towards one another, and Jesse sweeps her up into his arms. Her long hair flies up as he spins her around. Then she tilts her head under the brim of his Stetson, and they kiss.
At the moment his lips met mine, I knew that we would never again be apart.
He takes her into his arms and steps up into his saddle with ease, then rides off with her in his lap and her horse following along behind.
I knew then that we would spend the rest of our lives together. Forever. Oh, God, that's good.
Wearing a pair of noise-dampening headphones and a checked button-down nightshirt, the 30-something fair-haired woman stares down at her typewriter tearfully.
The end.
Her cozy study has images, maps, and artwork taped about, and empty drinks cans and food cartons. She places the final page, completing her manuscript, and reaches for a tissue. Oh. The box is empty. On a wall, a framed poster of Angelina and Jesse above the words, Joan Wilder, best-selling author of Passion's Lonely Lie. Joan sniffles her way into her bathroom that's festooned with reminder notes. She takes one and reads it as she moves through her well-appointed apartment past a framed Romance Book Club Award for Writer of the Year. There were no tissues, no toilet paper, and the kitchen rolls empty too. Pinning the bathroom note to a board below a kitchen mirror, she discovers a note reminding her to buy tissues and promptly uses that to blow her nose.
I finished, sweetheart. You want to celebrate? So do I.
Joan lights a gas fire and several candles on a marble mantel that's adorned with framed family photos. starring Michael Douglas. Kathleen Turner. Joan blows out the lighter stick and lovingly empties a small tin of tuna onto a china saucer. Her fridge doors are bedecked with a child's rainbow drawing and photos. Inside, it's largely empty except for some brown jars and bottles, a milk carton, a hard-boiled egg, and a sprig of garnish to top her cat's meal.
Romeo, Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? Hey, it's Bumblebee, kiddo. Just so you know, I spare no expense when I celebrate.
With Danny DeVito and Zach Norman. Joan leaves her white and ginger cat on the glass coffee table eating, while she chooses from a selection of miniature liquor bottles in a glass cabinet. Unable to unscrew the top off one, she uses a set of pliers to do the job. Her nightshirt almost meeting her knee-high socks, she opens the bottle and returns to her cream-coloured sofa as Romeo finishes his tuna. She then decants the bottle into a wine glass and settles back to study a selection of publicity material for her previous books, all romance-based and featuring the brooding cowboy, Jesse.
He's looking at you, Jesse. Whoever you are.
She raises her glass to a large poster for The Savage Secret, where the rugged Jesse is painted in silhouette. Having downed her drink, she casts the glass into the fireplace.
Are you finished?
She tosses Romeo's saucer in as well. Then stares into the flames for a long moment. Written by Diane Thomas, produced by Michael Douglas, and directed by Robert Zemeckis. Joan's pale, with gentle features and long hair that's only partly held up in a ponytail. As she's cuddling Romeo, she studies Jesse's silhouette again, with a sense of longing. A tree-lined city street, flanked by office and apartment blocks. On the sidewalk, a figure wearing black leather gloves pushes a coin into a payphone. On Joan's mantle is a photo of her with another blonde woman of a similar age. The phone rouses Joan on the sofa. Romeo's cleaning himself beside her.
Hello? Hello?
Joan's about to hang up when she notices her watch.
Oh my God, Romeo, is that the time? Gloria, we're going to be late.
On her way out, Joan locks her apartment door. She has the manuscript in a box, isn't wearing makeup, and her hair is loosely up in a bun. Consequently, she waves away her reflection in a hallway mirror. Opting for the stairs over the lift, Joan helps an elderly neighbour with her trolley bag.
Hi.
Hi, Duncan.
Mrs. Irwin, why won't you take the elevator?
Oh, Pumpkin, I never get in an elevator alone. You know, rapist. Where are you running off to?
Oh, I've got to get to my publishers.
By the way, Pumpkin, the mailman couldn't fit this into your box, so I told him I'd give it to you. That's some love letter.
For an Eduardo, care of her.
Mrs. Irwin, you're a tease.
I know, but I keep hoping for you, Pumpkin.
Joan hurries from her apartment building in a long, thick coat. The brown envelope is tucked into her shoulder bag. A street merchant with a toy stops her.
Hey, lady, how about a monkey for your little nephew? Come on, no, I'll give you for $10. Really great deal. Come on, lady.
No, I don't.
It's really nice. Come on, your boyfriend will love it. It's kind of kinky, you know what I mean? Come on.
A figure in a long brown leather coat and black gloves enters her apartment block holding one of her novels.
Lady, it's kind of cute to the
A janitor pushing a mop and bucket.
Hey, that's Miss Wilder's apartment. Can I help you?
The man in the leather coat turns to him. His face is shaded under a wide-brimmed hat.
Excuse me.
Get away from that door.
The stranger hands him a note and then stabs him with a switchblade.
Wimp. Wimp. Loser. Loser. Major loser. Too angry. Too vague. Too desperate. God, too happy. Oh, look with this guy, Mr. Mondo Dismo. I actually used to date him. Total sleazebuck. Wait a minute. Hold everything. Get a load of this character. Now, what about him?
No, he's just not.
Who?
Jesse? Maybe it's silly, but I know that there is somebody out there for me.
Oh, yeah? Where?
Certainly not here. Gloria, why do we always have to have the same conversation?
Because I like you, Joan, and I hate to see you all alone waiting for somebody who's not going to show up.
Okay, Gloria.
Joan hands over the manuscript.
Here it is. Read it and weep. I always do. I'll call you, okay?
Oh, come on, don't leave. Have another grasshopper.
I can't.
Come on, stay. I'm your publisher. I'm ordering you, too. I'm sorry I even dragged you to this place. I just want you to get out. Look, I know how hard you've been working. I know you're upset about your sister. Come on. How is she? Have you heard from her?
Elaine? I spoke to her last week. She's still in Colombia.
Have they found her husband's body yet?
Just the one piece. You know what's really creepy? I got this package from Eduardo from Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been mailed just before he...
Oh, God. Can you imagine how awful? Having your husband murdered. Well, how is she holding up?
Oh, she'll be fine. Elaine always manages.
Cartagena, Colombia. Joan's sister, Elaine, closes windows in a building overlooking palm trees and a sandy beach. She places a suitcase next to a sideboard and puts framed photos into a handbag. One of a dark-haired man with glasses and another of her and Joan. Then she puts a black fedora over her wavy blonde shoulder-length hair and hides her eyes behind large sunglasses. Emerging from behind a garage door, Elaine checks a side street. There are just some children playing by a high wall nearby. One of the kids is twirling a rope with balls on either end. When Elaine drives out of the garage in an orange sporty convertible, the boy notices and starts twirling it above his head. Elaine hurriedly slides the garage door shut, but the boy hurls the improvised bowler. It wraps around her neck and the balls knock her out. The boy races to the car, shoves her into the passenger seat, and speeds away across a T-junction. Cars skid to avoid him as he pulls a skillful U-turn on the beach road and weaves away through traffic. A crocodile slides towards others in a shallow pool as the young lad drives over grass in the grounds of a large fort, through a gateway in a grey stone wall topped with ramparts, and parks by a dock on the other side. Guards waiting escort a dazed Elaine from the vehicle and down to a motorboat. Watching from atop the fort wall is a short, stout man in a brown shirt, checked tie and black trouser braces. He sucks on a hand-rolled cigarette, then turns to a tall, balding man who's feeding crocs meat through a floor grate.
Hey, Ira. Kids here with the broad. They're taking her out to the boat.
Look at these snappers, will ya?
We should have just rifled her room.
Ralph, how many times do I have to tell you it's not in the country?
Well, this kidnapping stuff makes me real nervous. Nothing but trouble. Look, we've stolen enough of these antique trinkets to keep us living comfortably for the rest of our lives. Let's kiss off this third world toilet.
One last big one. Trust me, Ralph. Trust me.
Whoa! Did you see that, Ralph? Somebody's gonna get killed, and you're farting around with prehistoric animals. Come on, Ira, let's forget this one. I got a real bad feeling about it, real bad.
Will you stop worrying? Have I ever hurt you? I will never hurt you. I can't hurt you. We got the same blood. We're not two people. We are one person. Would I hurt me? Look at those snappers, Ralph.
Joan returns to her apartment to discover it's been ransacked. The lounge furniture has been tossed about, and the books from her study shelves now lie strewn across the floor. She gasps and turns towards a sound from the dining area. Cabinets have been searched. Even a wall clock hangs askew with its fascia open. Aghast, Joan shuffles towards the toppled chairs of her wooden dining set. The lounge sofa lies in tatters behind her, and as she pauses by her wall-mounted telephone... She drops Romeo and picks up the receiver.
Hello?
Hello, Joan. Joan, can you hear me?
Elaine, I can't talk right now.
Listen to me. Listen very carefully. I'm in trouble.
Elaine, please.
Joni, I am in real trouble.
What's the matter?
Has any mail been forwarded to you with Eduardo's handwriting on it? Any big envelope?
Yes.
Oh, honey. See if there's some kind of treasure map inside.
It says, El Corazon.
I need you to bring that map to me in Colombia.
Colombia? My God, what kind of trouble are you in?
Joni, please. Get to the Hotel Cartagena in Cartagena. When you arrive, call this number. 645824. Are you writing this down?
Oh, yes.
And remember, you mustn't tell anybody.
Elaine, I can't go to Colombia.
Joni,
Ira was holding her at knife point.
Colombia?
Do you have any idea what it's like in Colombia? I do. Your books do very well in these macho countries. They have jungles there, Joni. Insects the size of sanitation trucks. Revolutionaries. Have you had your shots?
Shots? What shots?
You see, you're completely unprepared. Wait a minute. Just hold on. Would you tell me what's going on? Why are you doing this?
Elaine is in some trouble. She has a... little domestic problem.
Domestic problem? Elaine's last domestic problem is finding her husband cut into small pieces. Now, I'm not going to let you do this. You cannot go.
Here's Romeo. Now, I want you to promise me to feed him and hold him at least once a day.
Joan takes a miniature bottle.
You're going to need something stronger than that.
Listen to me. You get bus sick, seasick, plane sick, train sick. You practically puke riding on the escalator at Bloomingdale's, for God's sake.
Well... a lot of people get sick in department stores. Joni, please, don't go.
You're not up to this, Joan, and you know it.
I know. But she's my sister.
I'll feed him, but I'm not picking him up.
With sleet falling through the night around them, Joan gives Gloria a kiss on the cheek and gets into a taxi, unaware she's being watched by the mustachioed killer who's sitting in a parked car.
Crazy!
The taxi drives away, and the stranger follows it in his vehicle. The silhouette of a plane coming into land across the moon. Wearing a simple beige skirt and jacket, Joan has her long padded coat under one arm and carries a hard blue suitcase through a small, bustling terminal. A seating area is packed. One man's head is wrapped in a blood-stained bandage. A fight breaks out after a man's hurled into some luggage. Armed police move in, and Joan edges her way through it all. Outside the airport, Ralph leaves a basic white car in a chaotic car park and moves towards an attendant.
The plane from New York, has it arrived yet? The Aereo Arrivo aquí?
No comprendo.
As Ralph heads into the building, directly behind him, Joan wanders out and approaches a man helping people board a bus.
Is this the bus to Cartagena?
¿Qué?
Oh.
No se pare atrás, pase la
¿Es este el autobús?
Suele.
Cartagena. Oh, you speak English. Good. Can you tell me, is this bus going to Cartagena?
Yes, Cartagena.
Thank you.
The mustachioed killer spots the map in her bag.
Thank you.
He hoists her suitcase onto the roof and boards with her, but the bus sign changed from Cartagena to Castillo de San Felipe. Ira's cousin Ralph emerges from the terminal and checks another bus. Joan struggles with a rickety wooden window and raises it just as Ralph's passing. He recognizes her from a photo on one of her novels he's holding. The bus drives away.
Hey, you're on the wrong bus!
Miss Wilder!
She got on the wrong bus. This is terrible.
Dense forest, blankets, and inhospitable mountainous region. A narrow dirt road cuts across an almost sheer slope, and Joan's bus rounds a bend on it. Overhanging greenery brushes luggage stacked on the ramshackle bus's roof. Clutching her material shoulder bag on her lap, Joan's woken from sleep when the bus jolts. Startled, she lowers her cracked window and stares out at brooding clouds obscuring a forested mountain peak. The bus trundles past treetops rising from the steep slope, Joan's alarmed to see a monkey in one. She asks a white-bearded man dozing beside her.
Excuse me?
He doesn't stir. The mustachioed killer is a few seats back, holding a cigar and a newspaper. Joan notices him watching her. He tucks his sunglasses into his jacket pocket, and, unnerved, Joan makes her way to the front of the bus.
Excuse me?
She treads on a small pig.
I'm very sorry. I'm really sorry.
Estúpida!
Its owner gives her a dirty look and pats her pet, while Joan sits beside the driver.
I'm sorry to bother you. Can you tell me what time we get to Cartagena?
Yeah?
Is this the bus to Cartagena?
Yeah?
I need to get to Cartagena.
Distracted by Joan, the driver plows into a 4x4 that was partially blocking the trail. Wooden crates tumble from the car and the roof of the bus, freeing an assortment of birds. The killer's sent sprawling onto the floor of the bus while the locals start berating the driver and Joan. The driver kicks the bus door open and checks on the other vehicle. There's no one on board, and suddenly steam starts jetting out the bus's engine. The driver waves everyone off and people salvage what belongings they can. Joan looks for her suitcase.
What are we going to do now? Where's my suitcase?
She finds it on a grass verge. The killer watches everyone else head off back along the trail and calmly pops a new cigar into his mouth. As Joan struggles along the verge and is about to follow everyone else, he steps out in front of her.
You don't have to walk. Another bus will come along. They know nothing. They are peasants.
Another bus? Really?
Of course. They are scarce to be maintained, even in Colombia.
She returns his smile, but steps back uncomfortably. The killer, who's smartly dressed in a grey suit, pale green shirt and dark tie, moves away. With the bus alongside her, Joan perches on her suitcase and stares out at the wilderness from the verge, then places her coat on top of the case for added comfort. Meanwhile, the killer checks on the progress of the others. They're disappearing in the distance. He glances back towards the bus, takes his cigar from his mouth, and as Joan heaves a sigh, he comes to stand in front of her. She's still clutching her shoulder bag, so he draws a gun on her.
What?
The purse.
What are you...
La bolsa.
The silhouette of a rugged man in a broad-rimmed hat appears on a ridge above them.
Alto!
He's every inch the outline of Joan's fictional Jesse. The killer shoots the man's water pouch.
Fuera!
The stranger drops the pouch and raises his hands, but then deftly produces a shotgun from his back. The killer ducks for cover and returns fire while Joan scrambles under the bus. Agile, the stranger leaps down, but the killer moves around the bus. Having reloaded behind a log, the stranger steps forwards, shoots under the bus and hits a fruit basket right beside the killer. Under constant fire, the killer barrels along the bus and out the back. The stranger strides over the bus's bonnet and takes aim, but the killer's fleeing and is already out of range. The stranger lets him go and returns to inspect the scene of the accident. Jones, still cowering under the bus, and watches him kick a basket.
What the hell? What the hell happened to my birds?
In cream trousers and suede boots, the stranger crouches down and peers at Joan through the wheel arch. He has roguish good looks and mid-length fair hair.
Hi.
The killer bursts out of greenery onto a dirt road in front of Ralph in his white car.
Pongo de este coche en nombre de la ley. Dese usted la vuelta. Vamos.
Oh, no. Talk about brakes.
The man flashed a police badge and climbs into the passenger seat. Ralph turns the car around and heads off along a muddy dirt track, trying to shield his face from the officer.
Bon idol, you.
Now come brand out.
You are American.
Oh, dear, Americanos, spit on them, I hate Americanos and scum, oh, scum.
He must be French. Amongst the wreckage of his 4x4, the stranger flings aside an adult magazine but takes a sailboat picture from its broken frame.
Well, honey, looks like we're going to have to wait just a little longer.
He folds it and continues salvaging as Joan appears.
Excuse me, would you please tell me how to get to a telephone?
No, lady, I don't have any idea, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's very important that I get one.
Well, we've all got our problems today, don't we?
Can you tell me where the nearest town is?
How about Miami?
Will there be another bus?
This is it. You got rush hour.
I have to get to Cartagena.
Cartagena? Angel, you are hell and gone from Cartagena. Cartagena's over there on the coast.
Oh, but they told me this bus.
Who told you that?
That man that...
A nice man who pulled a gun on you. Uh-huh. What else did he tell you?
Please, I need your help.
That's my new career.
It's very...
Lady. Half a year's work just flew south for the winter, all right? My Jeep is totaled. In about 5 minutes, everything I own in the world is going to be wet. So can you lighten up, please? I really don't have the time.
I'll pay you. You don't understand. It's a matter of life and death. If I don't get to my...
How much?
$50?
He turns to go.
Well, you said you just lost everything you owned.
Not my sense of humor.
Well, I'll pay you $100. $200!
He stops walking away and turns to look at her under the brim of his faded khaki hat.
I'll do it. For $5.
What? I'll pay you $250.
Now, I ain't cheap. But I can't be had. My minimum price for taking a stranded woman to a telephone is $400.
Will you take $375 in traveler's checks?
American Express?
Of course.
Got a deal.
Good.
She leads the way along the dirt track, but glances back to discover he's not moving. He stares down at the suitcase she's left for him, and eventually picks it up. He drops it beside her as he passes. Ralph's nippy little car pulls in at a small settlement and stops inches from a police chief outside a station. The chief eyeballs him, but then immediately stands to attention when the killer gets out of the passenger side.
Señor Solo. Firme.
Zolo says, "Assemble your men."
Sí, señor.
Walking along a trail of rock and mud in heels, Joan sets her case down and sighs as she watches her newly appointed guide march on ahead through the deluge. She hurries after him, dragging her case crudely over the uneven terrain. The stranger, who is now soaked through, stops on a slight bend where water is collecting in a muddy puddle.
Got any valuables in that suitcase?
No. Yes. All my clothes and things.
You got an umbrella?
No.
You got a good pair of walking shoes?
They're all like these.
He looks at her heels, water trickling in a steady stream off his hat. Then he picks her suitcase up and hurls it off the edge of the slope into dense foliage far below.
Okay, let's make some time.
You...
The land gives way beneath her. And then him as well, and they are both sent hurtling down the steep slope in a giant mudslide. By sheer luck, they miss large tree trunks, and eventually Joan bursts through several fronds of foliage and lands in a brown pool of water. She surfaces just as the stranger plunges towards her. He lands face first between her legs, and when he lifts his head and realizes, he beams.
One hell of a morning.
You okay? I said, are you hurt? What's the matter? You paralyzed from the neck up? Are you hurt?
No.
Good. What's your name?
I'm Joan Wilder.
Joan Wilder, welcome to Columbia.
On the shaded deck of a large wood-paneled boat, a phone is brought to Ira, who's cleaning a miniature statue.
Digger.
Oh, hi, Ma. It's me, Irving.
Ralph, you little twerp,
oh,
where are you?
Calm down, Ma. Who says I never call?
For Christ's sake, tell me the story.
All right, cousin. First of all, the stupid dame got on the wrong bus. Now I'm stuck in some kind of spicko military compound. They're mobilizing for Iwo Jima here.
Do they know who you are?
Oh, what do you think? I'm going up and introducing myself to every cop in the Pueblo. And another little tidbit, cousin. Guess who else is here?
Zolo.
Oh, well, give the man a cigar. You're goddamn right, Zolo. He got in my car. Not only are we kidnappers, but I'm about to have a close encounter with a cattle prod.
And he got his boys with him.
No. He's making do with the local yo-yos.
Ralph tries to remove his ID from a wanted board.
Look!
God damn it, Ralph, get that map. Just...
Don't yell at me, Ira. Don't yell at me. Look, you want to kill me? Take me back to Queens and kill me. Don't let me die in a jungle like a goddamn snake.
Ralph, god damn it, I don't care what you gotta do. Just get me that map.
Ralph falls, snatching the ID. Ira to Elaine.
Little sister took the wrong road. And that third party I told you about, he's tagging along.
The man who killed my husband?
The butcher who killed your husband. A very powerful man with his own private army to back him up. And whether he calls himself Dr. Zolo, Minister of Antiquities, or Colonel Zolo, Deputy Commander of the Secret Police, he's still just a butcher.
He tosses some pet crocs a steak.
Look at those snappers, will you?
The rain having stopped, Joan's mysterious guide is studying his waterlogged picture of his dream boat that has white sails. He spots her bending over a log.
What's the matter, you sick?
Oh, no. I lost my button.
You lost what?
I lost my button. My button.
You're gonna lose a lot more than that.
Her jacket sleeve ripped off. He takes her shoes from the log and unsheathes a machete from his waist. Then, having cut off the heels, he tosses them back to her.
These were Italian.
Now they're practical.
Is nothing that I own sacred to you?
Only your $375.
A bullet hits the tree behind her and he shoves her to cover.
Pops!
What the hell do they want? I haven't done anything lately.
Let it loose!
Joan's guide peers up the slope through binoculars as Zolo takes aim.
I'm shooting at a cattle prod.
cop. Wait a minute. He's after you. Who the hell are you?
Well, I'm a romance novelist.
You're what? What are you doing here?
I told you. My sister's life depends on me.
Oh, don't give me that. Christ, here they come. This may be a good time to try on those shoes right about now.
Zolo leads the chief and his men down the slope on ropes, while Joan and her guide flee into the undergrowth.
This feels awful.
Zolo's police pursue them towards a field of sugar cane.
Ladies, you are bad news.
Joan's guide cuts a path using his machete.
What'd you do? Wake up this morning and say, "Today, I'm gonna ruin a man's life."
Zolo looks about, then picks up their trail.
Do you know where you're going?
Looks like some kind of trail.
This is a trail?
Joan's guide hacks his way onwards, and only a vine saves him from tumbling into a steep ravine. There's a boulder-strewn river far below.
Lady, you are a jinx!
What about the bridge?
That ain't a bridge. Goddamn pre-Columbian arc. Can't get across that.
Come on, one more minute.
All right. Better pull them off right from here. You just stay right behind me.
He starts loading his shotgun.
God damn it. I knew I should listen to my mother.
As Zolo and his men appear on a ridge, Joan stares into the ravine and then makes her way onto the rusty old bridge. Her muddy shoes edge from one rotten board to another, and she holds onto riveted metal beams as she goes.
I could have been a cosmetic surgeon. $500 a year up to my neck and tits and ass.
Many of the bridge boards are missing, and it's riddled with vines. But Joan's now about a third of the way across.
Lady, I hope you're taking notes. Because you got a real, live Jesse going on right here.
She reaches up to a vine and places one foot on the next board. It snaps and falls into the white water below.
Romantic novelist, my ass.
Steeling herself, Joan reaches for another vine and takes a few more steps. She straightens up and holds onto another rusty beam. The next board bends slightly when she steps on it, but the one after that. Leaving her hanging from a beam, she grabs a vine. It rips free of the bridge and swings her across the ravine and into the cover of foliage on the other side. To her guide's utter astonishment, she lands safely on her backside. He fires some warning shots up towards Zolo and his men, picks a vine himself and tries the same thing, but swings face first into the ravine wall. Joan fishes a miniature liquor bottle from her bag, but struggles with the lid. Joan's guide has to climb up the sheer rock face, and Zolo's men have nearly cut a path down to the other side. As he struggles near to the very top, he calls out. The police and Zolo emerge on the other side just as Joan's guide disappears into the cover of greenery.
Yes, sir. No podemos pasar.
No los alcanzaremos.
What the hell are you doing? Drinking? I could have been killed. You're drinking.
He takes a sip until the police take pot shots into the forest around them.
Wait.
Drenched by another downpour, Joan follows her guide as he hacks through dense undergrowth. It's slow going, and he pauses to catch his breath and push his hair out of his eyes.
Are we stopping?
Leaning on a tree, he turns to give her a look, then steps aside and leaves the machete embedded in the trunk.
Be my guest!
She has to grab the machete with both hands to remove it. She then swipes at a frond. Her use of the blade is feeble at first, but before long she's picking up the pace. Her guide follows on behind, appreciating her long slender legs as they show through her ripped skirt. He smiles and wipes the rain from his mouth. Joan forges on while the rain continues pelting down. She glances behind her, then cuts a large frond in front. The skeletal remains of a pilot hanging out the cockpit window of a small plane. Joan's guide hugs her.
You okay?
She nods. He pulls foliage off the rest of the windscreen and peers inside.
Come on.
Taking her by the hand, he leads her down the side of the damaged fuselage. The forest is slowly claiming the plane's debris. He tries a door, but it won't budge, so he moves towards the back, which has been completely ripped open.
Is anybody else in there?
No. No, it's a cargo plane.
What is all this?
All this? About 5 to life in the States, a couple of centuries down here.
Oh, marijuana.
Oh, you smoke it?
I went to college.
Sure.
They clamber up into the shelter of the remaining fuselage, and Joan's guide peers into the cockpit with his torch to reveal that the pilot is wearing a Grateful Dead jacket. Beside the corpse, he notices a couple of lizards scampering across a dusty old holdall. He picks it up and takes it back over to Joan, who's trying to get dry. He shows her what could be an old record sleeve or magazine, and then finds a jar of pickles.
All right, okay.
And an unopened bottle of alcohol.
Oh, God, do I love those flyboys.
He unscrews the lid, sniffs the amber liquid inside, and then takes a swig. Savoring it, he passes the bottle to Joan.
Why?
This is Elaine's favorite drink.
She wipes the neck and takes a gulp herself.
You didn't tell me about that, a sister of yours?
I already did.
He takes another mouthful of the liquor and holds her gaze.
Her husband died, and I've come down here to comfort her. It's the truth.
Right. Yeah, it's the truth.
He checks the pockets of his sodden waistcoat.
All right, I'm gonna make a fire.
While she tries to open the pickle jar, he checks her bag.
Got any dry matches in here?
And discovers the map that Zolo's been after.
Well, looky here.
Oh, no, don't!
She tries to snatch it from him, but then stops.
I think you and I ought to have a talk.
All right.
Joan's guide lobs a second block of cannabis onto the fire he's got going and inhales deeply.
Yeah, that's what I call a campfire.
His head lolls back as he takes in the rush. Joan's nearby, nibbling on a pickle. He holds the map up.
So they're ransoming your sister, Miss El Corazon. That's Spanish for the heart.
This map here leads to the heart. But the heart of what?
I don't care.
You see here where it says this El Corazon is hidden in Cordoba province?
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting right in the middle of it.
All I care about is my sister, and that map is her life.
Like hell it is. Whatever's at the end of this map is your sister's life. Now we get our hands on this El Corazon. Then you got something to bargain with.
I knew it would happen.
You knew what would happen?
All you care about is yourself, isn't it? I knew that from the first moment I laid eyes on you.
Oh, was that the first moment when I saved your ass?
There, you see? There you go. You have no finesse, no style. A real man doesn't have to draw attention to his actions. You're Armando Dismo.
I'm, what am I? I'm what?
You're a man who takes money from stranded women. A real man is honest and forthright and trustworthy. Would you please do me the courtesy of looking at me when I'm speaking to you? I mean, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, if you had any kind of manners, if you...
He swings his machete over her shoulder and cuts the head off a snake, then pulls its long body past her. Her eyes widen as the scaly body just keeps coming.
Goddamn Bushmaster.
Is it the poisonous?
Yeah. But very tasty.
The head fell by her feet. She covers her mouth. A truck of officers and the police chief's white car that has Colombian flags either side of the bonnet stops short of the station. The chief and Zolo climb out and stare at eight heavily armed men in dark uniforms standing around three military 4x4s. Zolo steps forwards, and one of the men hands him a uniform still on a hanger and in clear protective wrapping.
Uniforme.
Joan swigs more liquor by the campfire.
See, you gotta figure, sulfur-crested cockatoos, they go for about 800 a shot. Then you got gentle red tails. They're close to 2,000 each. I figure I lost close to 15,000 bucks in that bus crash.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You want to know something crazy?
What?
I don't even know your name.
Well, you never asked me.
He's flicking through a magazine he's found.
Excuse me. I'd really like to
Colton.
Know.
Colton. Jack T. Colton.
What does a T stand
oh,
for?
Oh, God damn it, man. The Doobie Brothers broke up. When did that happen?
How long have you been down here?
Oh, man. Forever. I don't know.
Were you always into birds?
Mm. No, I, No, I was into shortcuts. Birds just seemed to be a fast way to get what I wanted. And a hell of a lot healthier than dealing in this crap.
What is it you want?
Holding a block of cannabis, Jack smiles at her.
Well, I think I'm going to throw another key on the fire.
Oh, no, please. I'm getting dizzy. What do you want? Seriously. I'd really like to know.
Came down here on a coffee boat about a year and a half ago, right? Christ, what a job that was. But I couldn't get over that ocean, though, you know? Yeah. I love the ocean. You know, you just kind of get out there all by yourself. Nobody else around. It's beautiful. So that's what I want. Try to get enough money together, buy a boat, sail around the world.
So you're just gonna sail away? All by yourself?
Yeah,
Sounds lonely, Jack T. Colton.
The light of the fire flickers warmth across her soft, pale face, and her blue eyes hold his gaze for a moment before she smiles and shifts.
Well, what does the T stand for?
Trustworthy.
He stares at her, smirks and swigs from the bottle, his tanned face showing stubble. She too smiles and stares into the fire with heavy eyelids. While he turns to get a blanket.
Oh, man, I tell you, one hell of a morning. It's turned into a bitch of a day.
She passes out, face first, into something soft beside her. He watches her, and then his eyes flit to the map in her bag. He takes it, casts her a cautious look, and then studies the parchment that has a black devil-like creature in the middle, holding a trident.
Tenador del Diablo. Devil's Fork.
He considers this. His eyes narrow. He shifts and rubs his chin. Asleep in his car, wearing an eye mask and with one of Jones' novels open beside him, Ralph is woken by Zolo and his militia rumbling past in their 4x4s.
Zolo!
Through binoculars, one of Zolo's militia spies two figures entering a hillside settlement. He speaks into a two-way radio.
Están cruzando el cementerio.
Jack, shouldering his backpack but holding his shotgun as he leads Joan through the village. A large man with a pistol tucked into his belt emerges through a doorway and follows them.
Friendly, aren't they?
Drug runners. Just try to look mean. Buenos dias.
A man in black shoulder barges Jack, who glances round to discover that several drug runners are now following them. They pass another on a porch. He stops carving a wooden stake and gets up.
¡Qué hombre! ¡Qué hombre!
Jack and Joan both glance round at the bearded gang leader, who's wearing a weathered frown under his hat.
Okay, here we go.
What?
I just knew I should listen to my mother.
¡Qué hombre!
Releasing his gun's safety.
You ready?
Excuse me. Gentlemen, we are in need of a car. Can any of you lovely gentlemen tell me where?
Only one car in village. One, the Bellmaker.
The Bellmaker. Thank you.
She and Jack hurry up the lane the man pointed out.
Bellmaker my ass. You know that fuselage we slept in last night? It's probably when old Juan's lost shipments.
You mean he's a slut?
Shh! Just don't say a word out loud, okay?
I dope.
Come on, let's go.
They climb some stone steps to the courtyard of a large single-level property. A pig and some hens forage in the dry dirt as the couple approach a set of large brown doors beside a shaded porch.
You hold back. This one, I'll handle.
Jack rings a small bell and knocks. As he gives Joan a reassuring wink, a man with dark curly hair and a full graying beard peers at them through a door hatch.
Ah, señor, buenos dias. Necesitamos su ayuno.
What do you want, gringo?
Oh, you speak English. Oh, that's great. We understand that you have a car. We would like to rent it or buy it. We have to get to a town.
What do you call this I'm living in? A pigsty?
No, this is lovely.
Hit the road.
No, amigo, you don't understand.
Hit the road.
Señor, I...
Vaya con Dios, gringo.
It's cool.
The man points a gun at them.
Vaya con Dios.
And the drug gang do the same behind them.
Okay, John Wilder, write us out of this one.
John Wilder? John Wilder? Vision Wilder?
He shuts the hatch and opens the door.
You are John Wilder, the novelist?
Yes, I am.
I read your books. I read all your books. Come in. Este es Juanita.
He tells the men, the one who writes the books I read to you on Saturdays.
Le damos la bienvenida, ¿verdad, muchachos?
Juanita, es Juanita. Come in. Adiós, amiga. I can't believe you're here. John Wilder. I've been reading your books all these years. I'm so honored to have you here. I can't believe it. Welcome to my humble house. John Wilder. Oh, I'm sorry, I haven't introduced myself. I'm Juan. I live here. ¿Qué pasó?
To Jack.
The greatest novelist. Get the door, please.
Zolo and his militia ride into the village and stop their vehicles. He climbs down onto the muddy dirt road wearing knee-high brown leather boots. His uniform is deep green, and he opens his switchblade in his gloved hand before crossing to an elderly woman sitting on a porch. She's picking corn from cobs into a basket and doesn't stop even when he bends down towards her.
Buenos días. Gringos. Americanos.
Gringos.
No.
Americanos.
No.
Zolo hurls the basket aside and hauls the woman away. A young local boy in a poncho and hat overhears the commotion and runs towards Juan's villa.
Come in. Make yourself at home. Ever read The Return of Angelina?
No. Oh, that woman makes me hungry.
How about Love's Wicked Kiss?
No, I haven't read that one either.
Read it. Take it. I have many copies. I have here The Ravagers, and I'm waiting for Angelina's Savage Secret. I'm so glad you're here in Colombia. I want to show you all around my beautiful village. We have colorful tile roofs, typical cobblestone streets, and very rich fields. I was born here, and so was my whole family.
What I would really like would be a phone.
No phones. I hate phones. I don't have a phone. But have a drink. Let's hang out. Look, like it? I can be in one of your books. Oh, your drink. I got Southern Comfort. Or Michelob. Keating, Bex, Dos Equis, Perrier, Anchor's Team, Dr. Brown.
A Xerox machine.
Yes, but she's broken.
Zolo's men arrive.
Where is the nearest phone?
Many miles from here.
Can we get there in your car?
Who told you you had a car?
The men in the village.
They told you had a car? They're such comedians. They meant my little mule, Pepe.
Juan surprises Zolo and his men by ramming through wooden doors in a sporty new pickup. Their 4x4s have gun mounts on the back of them.
Not bad for a little mule, eh?
Juan skids around a corner.
Now Pepe's warming up.
A pig standing in a junction up ahead.
I can't hurt my favorite pig.
The wheels send mud flying as Juan heads back towards Zolo and his men. They send one 4x4 off the road and race past another two before ramping over a bump.
See over there by the fence? That's where my mother was born. And see that tree, the third tree after reach? My brother planted that tree.
Zolo's men maintain pursuit.
Okay, Pepe, let's lose him.
Juan accelerates down a narrow lane that's flanked by rickety fencing and greenery on either side.
That's crazier than I am.
Gracias, yeah.
Juan races off-road and through a cornfield. Zolo's militia plow through greenery. Juan's truck has Little Mule printed on the side. It emerges through the cornfield onto a hillside meadow.
What the hell are you doing? That field was covered.
I wanted to show you this other field.
Zolo's men rejoin the chase from a side lane.
This guy who's following you, he's very persistent.
The back of Juan's truck is peppered with bullets. Zolo stands and takes aim. A few fuel canister in the back of the truck explodes.
No problem. My little mule is fireproof. See that river?
What, the one without the bridge?
This river is the main water supply for many villages.
What do you mean, the one without the bridge?
It feeds right into the Amazon.
The one without the bridge? Where the hell are you going?
To Lupus Escape. I used it many times in the past.
He presses a remote to activate a ramp. The truck sails through the air and lands in soft green grass on the other side. One then presses the remote again, and the ramp becomes a barrier that sends one of Zolo's 4x4s crashing into the river. The two remaining vehicles are forced to stop, and Zolo barks at a gunman. He then watches the truck race off into the distance.
You're okay now. You need a little mule to use Lupus Escape. You know that river? It's impossible to cross for 200 miles in either direction. In fact, over that mountain, the river becomes wild, muy peligroso. Waterfalls, rapids, Angelina country. Right, Joan?
Whatever happened to Lupe?
Ay, ay, ay. Terrible disappointment to family.
I can imagine.
He entered the preschool, so I took over the business. It's for the best. I'm not so reckless. He might have ended up hanging from El Tenedor del Diablo, like used to happen to bandidos.
El Tenedor del Diablo?
Okay, yeah, let's hit it. We're on a roll. I'm sorry, I cannot take you all the way to Cartagena. Beyond this town, I am a wanted man. But in the morning, there's always a bus. It will take you.
Jax recognized the Devil's Fork tree on the horizon from the map.
All the things you can say to me right now, I've lost her, Ralph, is going to get the most teeth broken in your mouth.
Look, bullet head, if they're hiking through the jungle, there's nothing I can do about it. I have a car. I am not Tarzan. I have been through every one horse hole for a 200-mile radius. You should have seen the river I had to traverse this morning. Look, so don't give me any of your crap, you gutless wonder. You have been an embarrassment to me and the whole family ever since you were born. And one more thing, I...
Juan's truck.
You are the luckiest son of a... She's here.
She's there.
She's right here. She's coming right toward the phone booth. She's with some guy. How do I know? She likes guys. So do you, muddy cone.
Ralph hangs up and moves away as Joan uses the phone. Jack enters a hotel in the colorful town.
Señor, buenas tardes. ¿Tienen cuatro para una noche? ¿Un baño?
Yeah, all the rooms have baths.
Oh, that's great. You speak English, too. That's great. Listen, you wouldn't have a Xerox machine around here, would you?
Yeah, we have one in the back.
I mean, it's big enough to take, like, map size?
Yeah, complete.
Yes, I understand. I'll do that.
Joan hangs up and turns to Jack.
Well, I talked to Elaine. She's all right. They're going to wait for me to take the bus in the morning.
Oh, that's great. Then slide, man. You're covered.
I don't know. He sounded so smug.
Sure he is. I mean, you're bringing him what he wants. You're bringing him the map.
There. Well, I guess this is it.
So.
Oh. 375, that was the contract, right?
Yeah, that was it.
He accepts the wallet of traveler's checks and then looks about at the bunting and other decorations.
At least I can do buy some dinner. Looks like it's going to be a hell of a party.
I'd like that.
Tell you what, I got a room in the hotel. Why don't you go get cleaned up? I'll buy us some new rags. Number 7.
7?
Yeah.
That's my lucky number.
Nighttime, and the town square is glowing with lanterns, market stalls, and a small Ferris wheel. Joan comes out of the hotel suite bathroom with a towel wrapped around her and is thrilled to discover that Jack has laid out a loose silky beige drawstring top and dark patterned skirt on the bed. Jack's outside in white trousers and shirt. He stops when Joan appears.
It's just beautiful. Thank you, Jack.
She gives him a coy smile and then moves closer. Ensconced, Jack holds her by the hand and looks her over. Over dinner...
I think your writing's hot.
It's great.
I mean it, I'm telling you, I'm impressed.
I am. You've never even read the book.
I know.
I suppose it's my way of living in another age.
If you did that, I never would have met you.
She beams.
I got you something.
A small, elegant, heart-shaped pendant on a necklace. Nearby, Ralph watches them.
El Corazon?
They smile at each other. Ralph edges towards Joan's bag that's hanging on the back of her chair. He pretends to drop his hat. Joan puts the necklace on, and Jack's captivated by her. He adjusts the small pendant so that it's hanging over her top.
Let's dance.
Oh, no, I can't.
Come on, let me show you.
Jack guides her towards an area where people are dancing. Meanwhile, Ralph's under a neighbouring dinner table and reaches out towards her bag. Jack starts to teach Joan how to dance to the beat. A woman sitting at the table Ralph's under dabs her mouth with a serviette. Jack shows off a few steps that leaves Joan in awe, but he coaxes her on. The woman who's dining dabs her mouth again, but this time drops her serviette and it lands on Ralph's outstretched arm as he's once again reaching for Joan's bag.
I lost my langostino.
The woman hauls Ralph up by his lapels and wrestles him out of the dining area. She then starts beating him up. Joan's relaxing into the dancing with Jack. With their fingers entwined, they quick step back and forth and then move closer. He circles their hands around and then places them on her hips. And when she playfully tries to go, he pulls her back with a flamboyant twirl. The angry diner shoves away an attendant trying to stop her assault on Ralph. On the dance floor, Jack puts his arm around Joan's waist and they spin. He twirls her in his arms. Her wavy hair flies up and then he dips her. As they straighten up, their lips are inches from each other. The carnival atmosphere continues, but they're lost in each other's eyes. Fireworks are up behind them as they move closer and kiss passionately. By candlelight, lying naked on top of Joan, Jack stares at his boat picture.
Someday, if I had the money, I'd take you. I'd sail away. Just the two of us. Around the world and back again. I promise you we'd do that.
They share a tender kiss and hug.
Why haven't you taken the map away from me?
What are you talking about?
I saw that tree today, the Devil's Fork. It's on the map. You know how close we are?
Well, sure I do, but what does that got to do with it?
I was thinking about something you said, about having more to bargain with.
Yeah, the best way to help your sister is to get that treasure. And then you could waltz into Cartagena, you're holding all the cards.
I'd love to see you on that boat. But, Jack, if we have to give it up to save Elaine...
Well, we give it up. I mean, it's your sister. Hell yeah, of course we give it up, but that's the point. At least we got the leverage to do it.
She looks from him to his sailboat picture.
Okay. Okay. Let's go for it.
They kiss passionately, and Jack surreptitiously slips the map from under the mattress back into Joan's bag. The morning after the carnival, and as a few drunken revelers stagger through the square, Zolo's two remaining 4x4s roll in. They come to a halt outside the hotel, and Zolo gets out. Jack quietly climbs out of the first floor hotel room window. Joan does the same, and they edge along a narrow apron. While Zolo considers his next move, Joan slides down a lamppost. Zolo glances towards the hotel. Jack and Joan commandeer Ralph's car, unaware he's sleeping in the back under a blanket.
What are you doing?
Hot wire in the car.
Try the key.
As they drive away, Zolo moves towards the hotel, completely oblivious. Hurtling along a remote dirt track in Ralph's car, Jack drives past a roadside monument. He reverses, and Joan checks the map.
There it is, that's the shrine.
Yep.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Ralph's listening under the blanket, but as they take the detour, one of Zolo's men appears on horseback and radios in their location. Ralph's little car speeds to a halt when a crude meadow track on the verge of some trees runs out. Jack and Joan climb out, and he puts his hands on his hips.
Well, this can't be all. There's got to be another clue here.
Yeah, landmarks change, things grow, all that stuff, you know.
Oh. Hey, you hear that?
Waterfall.
The map folds to form a heart around a waterfall.
All right, Joan!
White water, thundering over a sheer drop into a tumultuous plunge pool, sending up clouds of mist. Tiny in comparison, Jack and Joan edge their way around the pool. In a tunnel behind the waterfall.
Oh! This has got to be it! Hey! What does Leche de la Madre mean?
Leche de la Madre?
Yeah, it's on the map.
It means mother's milk.
Mother's milk?
Shining his torch, Jack guides the way along the cave tunnel, and as they round a bend, they discover a massive, pale stalactite dripping into a pool that glows white.
I'll be goddamned. Mama, I'm home.
While Joan holds a torch, Jack digs into the pool.
I can't believe I'm doing this.
What?
Digging for treasure? With you? Jack?
Yeah.
You're the best time I've ever had.
He stops and looks at her.
Never been anybody's best time before.
She smiles, and after a few more shovels... Jack casts the spade aside and reaches into the murk with both hands. He lifts out a package wrapped in material. Peeling it away, he finds straw and something else. A cheap porcelain bunny.
Somebody out there's got a really sick sense of humor.
Wait a minute. My first book, Treasures of Lust. I hid the treasure inside the statue.
Jack looks around for a rock and uses it to crack open the figurine. In the base of it is a heart-shaped emerald the size of Jack's palm. It glistens as he holds it up.
Jesus Christ, we're in a lot of trouble.
Understatement of the year, asshole.
Ralph with a gun.
Is there anybody who isn't following you?
Put the goods in the bag.
Jack drops the emerald into Ralph's carrier bag.
Now move it before Batman comes home.
Time I had a chauffeur, Miss Wilder. Back off, me creep, just back off.
Oh, I'm the creep, huh? Well, at least I'm honest. I'm stealing this stone. I'm not trying to romance it out from under her.
Well, wait a minute now. Going for the stone was my idea.
That's what all the good con artists want you to think. He made you think you needed it, you sap. Get in and drive. Come on, move it. Move it! See how you like being stuck in...
Solo and his men.
Get in!
Ralph trips and rolls with the carrier bag down a grassy slope.
Which way do we go?
Follow that stone!
At the bottom of the valley, Ralph flees, firing indiscriminately over his shoulder at Joan and Jack following behind. Zolo's 4x4s approach in the distance, but Ralph stops because up ahead...
Mounties!
Jack jumps on Ralph and wrestles him for the bag. He hurls Ralph to the grass and jumps into the moving car. Zolo's vehicles and his militia on horseback arrive together. Ralph's left cowering on the ground, surrounded by horsemen.
Where the hell are you going?
Where am I going? Hold on, Blueface, escape!
Joan drives straight into the river, and the car floats down rapids. As they drift between rocks and trees at the mercy of the current, Jack gives Joan a quizzical frown.
Where you going? He's scary. You going anywhere?
The rapids pick up, and the pair spot a waterfall up ahead.
What are we gonna do now? Jump!
They leap from the vehicle as it careers over the fall. Jack surfaces and, fighting the torrent, manages to cling to some overhanging foliage on one side. Meanwhile, Joan climbs onto a rock on the other, and the rapids rage on between them. Jack eventually spots her and waves, holding up the carrier bag with the gem inside.
You drowned!
I did!
You okay?
Oh, sure! I'm great! I'm fine! Only you're on that side!
There's no way across this sucker!
You did this on purpose!
What the hell are you talking about? We just went over a waterfall!
Admit it! You planned this all along! I knew I could depend on you! I knew it!
What's the name of that hotel in Cartagena?
Hotel Cartagena, what do you care?
All right, now you just head towards the sunset and you'll make it. And I'll be there.
Oh, yeah, sure.
With El Corazon in your pocket, what about my sister?
Well, they don't have to know about this. You got the map.
But you got the stone.
Yeah.
Zolo's men fire at them from the top of the waterfall.
I'll meet you there. Trust me.
What?
They're forced to retreat. The tall tower and domed roof presides over urban sprawl in a sun-kissed city. On the streets below, a group of men break into laughter upon noticing Jones' disheveled state. She wanders between passing pedestrians and into the grand entrance of the Hotel Cartagena.
So you made it finally. Got the map?
Yes, I brought it. I want to talk to Elaine.
No, you can't talk to her till I get it. All right, now look out your window.
See the fort across the bay? The tower?
Yes.
You take a water taxi right outside your hotel. You meet me there in 2 hours. All by yourself.
With a relieved Elaine, Ira hangs up, but Jones left worried. Her skin and clothes still muddy from her ordeal, she sits in her hotel room and makes another call.
Hello?
Has Jack Colton checked in?
In the last 2 minutes, no.
She sighs and hangs up. A nighttime thunderstorm lights up the sky. As instructed, Joan takes a boat taxi to the fort across the bay. She hasn't changed clothes and still clutches her shoulder bag as the vessel docks. Joan steps off and moves towards the fort. She glances back towards Ira's boat on which armed men stand guard. The taxi chugs off into the night. Joan passes through the open gateway and into the grassy area where crocodiles were lurking in a small pool. She walks into a cobbled colonnade and heads towards a metal drum burning at one end. The contained fire is in a small, weathered antechamber. As Joan approaches the flaming drum, she looks about.
Over here.
She follows Ira's voice to a set of wide, grimy, cellar-like passages with curved ceilings.
Stop right there. Let me see the map.
Where are you?
Let me see the map.
Let me see Elaine. Joanie?
When Elaine is shoved into the passage up ahead of her, Joan smiles with relief and takes the map out of her bag.
Drop the map and back off.
She does as instructed. Then Ira appears in a grey suit. Two of his associates follow behind, holding Elaine.
If this isn't genuine, if you've pulled a fast one,
using a small torch and an eyeglass, Ira studies the map's authenticity. Then he looks up and approaches Joan with a cold glare.
Joan Wilder, you and your sister can go.
Elaine's released and the sisters hug, but as they are about to leave, they back up as bullets hit the ground in front of them. Then Jack appears around a corner.
I missed you at the hotel.
Zolo's men shove him forwards at gunpoint.
We all did.
Ira and his men are captured too. Then everyone turns as a uniformed figure steps out of the shadows with a cigar in his mouth. It's Solo.
You brainless broad, you let him follow you here. Boss.
Solo sets light to the map.
This map is nothing. They already have the stone.
Ralph's shoved to the ground, bruised and with his arm in a sling.
I had it in my hands, Myra. These hands that are gonna break every bone in your body.
Solo points his gun.
Later.
And smiles, but it's fleeting, as he then steps up to Joan and slowly removes his cigar.
What is it?
I don't know.
Where is the stone?
I don't. We dug, we didn't find anything.
Solo's dark, terrifying glare flits between her and Jack. Then his smile returns.
Tráiganla!
Solo has Jack, Joan and the others brought out to the crocodile pool. Solo throws his cigar into the pool and then turns to Joan.
Crocodiles shed tears when they eat their prey. You have heard of these tears, I am sure. But have you seen them?
Stop it! He cuts Joan's hand with his blade and then holds it out over the pool that's home to half a dozen or more of the reptiles. The creatures move closer, and Ira can't help but observe.
Look at those snappers. You can forego this agony. Simply tell me, where is el corazón? Where is the heart? Where is the stone?
All right, let it go, will you? He doesn't know where it is. I've got it.
What is it?
Jack hesitates.
It's in a safe place.
Where is it?
Solo keeps Joan's bleeding hand held out over the pool.
What is it?
Jack sighs, and the militia holding him at gunpoint gets the nod from Solo before striking him in the groin with his rifle. Jack winces. Ralph and Ira share a curious look, but then Jack straightens up and starts gently jiggling his right leg. A lump travels down, and the heart-shaped emerald slides out onto his boot. Solo's men shine their torches on it, and everyone's eyes widen.
Choke on it.
He kicks the gemstone high into the air. It hits a palm tree and drops towards the pool, but Solo catches it in his gloved hand.
Thank you.
A crocodile bites his hand clean off. He drops his blade. Jack wrests his captor's gun from him. Joan snatches the blade, while Jack, who has one eye on the greedy croc, lays down covering fire. Joan dashes across the gun battle and leads her sister away. Solo uses his neckerchief to bandage his bleeding stump. In the melee, he snatches up a shard of wood with nails protruding from it and goes after the sisters. Suddenly, Ira's men appear on the walls.
Bring the boat around! Hold them down! Let me get to the boat!
Iris heavies draw attention off Jack as the crocodile leaves the pool. Solo pauses a little unsteadily. Jack watches the croc disappear around a corner. He steps out and fires wildly towards Solo's men before racing towards the corner after the croc. Solo's Solo lights another cigar from a lantern.
Just a little more.
And hears the sisters escaping. One of Ira's men is shot from the wall. Zolo's men begin to regroup.
Guerreros!
Ira! Ira! Come back here, Ira!
Jump, Brown! Jump!
I can't swim, you know that, Ira!
I'll come back for you!
You promise?
I'll send the boat back for you, Ralph!
When?
Soon!
How soon?
Very soon!
Jack has to dive for the croc before it can slither off the dock.
No. No. No.
He throws his gun aside and clings to the large croc's tail.
Where do you think you're going, old pal? Come on, cough it up.
On top of the fort, Zolo steps out in front of Joan and Elaine, brandishing the nail-strewn piece of wood.
Johnny.
Joan puts down an oil lamp.
How will you die, young whaler? Slow, like a snail, or fast, like a shooting star?
Joan releases Zolo's switchblade behind her back, and just like her fictional heroine Angelina, she hurls the knife at Zolo. But he holds up the wood, and it sticks in that. Elaine passes out. Zolo pulls the knife out, throws the wood away, and brandishes his trusty blade instead. Joan backs away to a rampart.
Jack
glimpses Zolo lunging for Joan, but he's still holding on to the croc. Zolo has Joan pinned up against the rampart, but Jack's gun is just out of reach. Joan struggles to hold the killer off. Jack can't save her and the croc. So he lets the reptile go and takes aim at Zolo. He's out of bullets and so starts to scale the fort's sloping wall. Zolo and Joan tumble to the rain-soaked ground and roll over the grate below which more crocodiles lurk. He tries to force his dagger into her, and she desperately reaches for the shard of wood he threw away. Her bleeding hand sends the crocs below into a frenzy, but she can't quite reach the weapon. Losing grip on the wall, Jack slides partway down. With the blade inches from her face, Joan presses Zolo's cigar into his cheek. She grabs the nailed piece of wood and bashes his bleeding stump, then knocks him back onto the lantern with it. Flames engulf his uniform, but he staggers for one last attack. Joan dodges it, and he crashes through the grate. While he's consumed by ravenous crocs, Jack leaps through the ramparts, and Joan turns to him. She falls into his arms.
You're my cousin, Ira! Don't you remember? Your mother! My mother! That way! That way! He's getting away! He's got it all! Go that way!
Johnny? Yeah.
Okay. All right, here's what we gotta do. Get to the American consulate. Just tell him everything.
Well, where are you going?
He might even believe you, but just one thing. Don't mention my name. Cartagena cops and I go way back. Elaine, it's been a pleasure.
You're leaving? You're leaving me?
Joan drops her groggy sister back onto the stone floor as Jack's about to jump off the ramparts. He shakes his head and walks up to her.
You're gonna be all right, Joan Wilder. Yeah.
Cradling her face in his hands, they share a passionate kiss.
Always were.
He steps onto the rampart and dives into the inky water far below. She rushes to the edge and then reaches for the pendant he bought her and sighs. Joan Wilder stands at a large office window staring out at the Manhattan skyline and toying with her pendant. Gloria sobs, reading Joan's latest manuscript at her desk.
Well, that is far and away your best book. I can't believe how fast you cranked this out.
So you really like it?
Like it? Look at me. Look at me. I'm a mess. Made me cry. Tell anybody, I'll cut your heart out. I love the end where he dives off the high wall and swims away, and then he meets her at the airport. They sail off around the world together. God, I can't believe how this got to me.
Well, I was inspired.
Jody, you are now a world-class hopeless romantic.
No, hopeful.
She sighs and tugs the pendant.
Hopeful romantic.
With an armful of groceries, Joan walks straight through a group of pushy street merchants and then stops in awe of something up ahead. A tall white sailboat, exactly the same as the one in Jack's picture, is parked on a trailer outside her apartment block. She walks towards it and calls up as Jack appears on deck. She stares up, and he holds out his arms. Then grips onto some rigging and kicks a ladder down to her. She leaves her groceries on the sidewalk, keeps a bunch of yellow flowers she bought, and climbs up to join him, admiring the crocodile boots he's wearing.
I like your boots.
Yep, that poor old yellow-tailed guy developed a fatal case of indigestion. Died right in my arms.
I can't blame him. If I were to die, there's nowhere else on earth I'd rather be.
I couldn't stop thinking about you. I even read one of your books.
Then you know how they all end.
Yeah.
They share a long kiss. Printed on the back of the yacht in black lettering is the boat's name, the Angelina Columbia. And as Jack and Joan continue to kiss at its bow, the vessel is towed slowly down a long, straight New York Avenue.